So I'm going to just kind of break this 20 minutes up into, I think normally in the past when we spoke, it was sort of what it was like before, how we kind of started on the road to recovery and what it's like after. But I'm going to focus on the relapse part of this a little bit. So a little bit less on what it was like before, and we'll see how it goes. But anyways, so I started binging and purging when I was 5. I was always kind of a strange kid. The reason I was doing it, I think, was because I had kind of gotten the message, from, I don't know, kids in the neighborhood. And my dad was kind of had some things to say about, you know, being fat or whatever. And I internalized that the way a weird 5-year-old would internalize it and thought, I have a solution to that problem. If anybody wants to make fun of me, I'll just throw up and I'll never have to worry about that. Cause I kind of come from a stocky bunch of people. And I kind of did it in response to a very specific sort of, person at a child care center. So when I started, but, there were other things going on too, a lot of like fear in the household and I don't know, I can't really pin down exactly when sort of the self-hatred started, but it was definitely associated with starting to do this weird stuff as a kid. And I think I started because I didn't want anybody to make fun of me. But then it was also the purging part of it was like it was something I had power and control over. And so being able to exert power and control was sort of stress relieving as far as fear is concerned. But, very quickly it sort of became a lot of these binge and purging episodes every day. And it went on, for almost 40 years. And, I think I certainly lost all of my teeth, just about all of them, but luckily I've been blessed with an uncle who's a dentist. And, I think that, there are definitely a lot of gastrointestinal problems as a result of doing this for so long. And I cannot say that there was ever any thought of a context for relapse, because I never stopped until I came to OA. I do know that, maybe it's safe to say I was prone to be very afraid of what other people thought and other things. And then all these resentments just sort of built up and built up. And so everything was always out of balance with me, especially just my mood was, crazy. I'd get really angry, have these meltdowns, smash my head into walls when I made mistakes or didn't do something perfectly. It was pretty crazy. And it's funny, like I think about when you talk about high functioning addicts, one thing I was able to be was high functioning in the middle of all of it. So I could hide, I learned how to isolate, I learned how to keep people from knowing. And because I had sort of attached this idea that I have to do the best at whatever it is I attempt to do, I became a high functioning addict, when I went to college, when I finally got serious about it, got almost straight A's, I wrote a lot, I painted a lot, I'm a musician and have always had that perfectionism, hard baked into the mix. But I got married in, 2008. And I told my ex-wife, that I had this problem, but I didn't tell her that it was like still going on. As most people know, there's just so much lying and dishonesty that goes into trying to hold up this architecture of our defenses against the world. But anyways, we got married, it wasn't perfect. Every once in a while, I'd have these verbal blow-ups, and I think it was pretty hard on her. And we ended up having a kid in 2011. And in 2015, she just had enough of everything. And there was a big blow up. And believe it or not, it was around food. It was around our son's, I'm not going to go into the details, but, and so a couple weeks later, this was February 2015, I decided to come into the OA rooms, and I'd heard about them on the radio, maybe on KXCI or something. I just heard about it in passing while driving. And so I was aware that it was out there. And I think I might have only heard it that one time on the radio, but it stayed in my head. And I probably heard it on the radio several years before 2015. But so anyways, I and my ex-wife came to this OA meeting on the east side, and she's very good and has been very supportive. So we came in the rooms, and I started to look around, and there was somebody there who I was like, I think I feel safe around this person, and asked them to be my sponsor. And so from 2015 to 2017, we worked, and I got so many good resources from my first sponsor during this time. I have a folder full of it, and it's all been useful for what I'll talk about in the post-relapse. But we ended up getting divorced, and it was tough, and I was having a hard time at my job because I'd get angry, and, coworkers weren't fond of that. So, but when I think about this in terms of the relapse, so my work with my sponsor, I call a couple of times a week to check in, and we'd work once a week in person. And we worked through all of the steps, although I didn't want to sponsor. When we got to step 12, I was like, I don't want to do it. I'm not abstinent. Because the pattern of this sort of relapse period was not one of complete recovery, and I was just having a terrible time. All of my resentments and fears were such a mass of tangled that fourth stepping was like just to write everything down was one thing, but I didn't really understand until we got to step 10 and my sponsor explained that there's a daily practice that needs to go on. There's a certain amount of work. And she presented it to me as a step 4 through 10 every day, not just like once every 6 months. And so I really didn't really do much of that. One day I'd wake up and try to do a little 4 through 10, or I didn't work it very, very hard. And so I got like several 30-day chips and a couple of 60-day chips. I think I might have got a 90-day chip in that sort of 2 years and change period. But the inventory is just required. I just wasn't putting in enough work. And I don't really realize it at the time, because at the time I'm like, I'm putting in tons of work. I'm going to 2 meetings a week, and I'm calling twice a week. So relatively speaking, I'm thinking, and all the while I got this long history of blaming God for everything, because I was raised, in church, and I thought God would heal me from this problem once I got older. And when God didn't heal me from it, that started a long period of just yelling at God all the time. So now it's like, hey, God, I'm doing all this work and I'm not getting more than 30 or 45 or maybe 60 days of absence at a time. And then I go and throw up again. And, then sort of the environment of the world in 2017 kind of changed, and lots of negativity seemed to be available for me to feed on or see or consume. And then I quit my job, and then my sponsor needed to take some time you know, for other things. And so I started maybe working with a second sponsor for just a little bit, but it just all crashed. I was like, the longest I've gone is like 94 days or something, and none of this is working, and I don't care anymore. I'm an Uber driver now after 10 years of working for the water department, and I'm just, I just couldn't handle everything that had it was a lot of change, and I just didn't really realize pre-relapse that there was only going to be one way to deal with higher levels of resentment in the mix. So, and the only way to deal with them is more work. You know, that's just the straight up fact of the matter. And it's like, I thought I was doing so much work, but then it's like, you know, when you reach the top of the mountain, keep climbing, it's sort of a, and I was just like, I don't want to do any more work. Screw this program. So I left. And so for all of 2018, almost, I, you know, was driving as an Uber driver, and I think there was more binging and purging occurring during 2018 than at any other time in my life. I mean, it was a shocking amount of money went down the drain. So, and I was very suicidal very quickly. I think after a few months of that, I was just wanting to be dead. And so it was as negative of a year as I can think of. And yet I go back to that high functioning, you know, I was working on a music project that year, and but I kept thinking that like the money wouldn't run out or something. And then the money ran out, you know, it's sort of like, and that money was basically fueling this massive relapse to try to drown all of the feelings and emotions, because I just couldn't get around them. And, you know, when I realized that, like, you know, I'm sitting in the back of a police vehicle because somebody's like, we think that guy took a bunch of sleeping pills. I'm not going to go into the sort of the details of it, but that's sort of what happened. And they were taking me to a place to be committed. So after that happened, it was sort of like, okay, I'm not going to be able to be a father to my kid. I'm not going to make it. So I went back to OA, and my first sponsor, she had recommended somebody who might be a good sponsor to work with. So I called that person. And so this is the post-relapse. That the difference, or what I needed in the post-relapse, was this other sponsor required me to call in every day. And every time I threw up, he wanted me to write a report about it, an after action report. And so there's really only two, it's like a fork in the road. There's two ways this is going to go. I'm either going to say I'm going to do the report and lie about it, or I'm just like, I'm just going to write it up like he's asking me to every time. So I decided on honesty. And so that ended up being a big deal, because for some reason, having to write it up when I did it, instead of just call someone on the phone and be like, yeah, I threw up yesterday. This was more like, I need the time. I need what you ate. I need what you were feeling, what you felt afterwards. That was the requirement of this. And that's quite a bit of work to do after binging and purging the night before. So, you know, the point I'm trying to make in my 20 minutes is that relapse, you know, occurs when the resentments are, I suppose, just too, we get overwhelmed. But a lot of people in meetings say, don't stop coming, you know, don't let a relapse keep you from coming, because you can always grab on if you're coming. But if you're not showing up to any meetings and you've just shut, and I just let everything go, then it's just into the wildness, into the madness. There's no tether in from to keep the distance to the black spiral, you know, it's like keep from going all the way into the black hole. But, you know, so having to call in every day and make these purging reports was kind of tough. But there was other work too. So there was the business of starting a gratitude journal and the business of making these things called affirmations, where you're like, one of mine is like, I'm not merely serene, I am joyful. Laughter is spilling out of me everywhere like light. I am the soul of levity, you know, like it's just absurd. Cause I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm a gloomy, melancholy, you know, moody. And this was, the sponsor was like, I want you to shoot for the absurdity in this stuff. Don't shoot for the middle ground. I'm like, but it's a lie. It's dishonest. It doesn't matter that it's a lie and it's dishonest. Throwing up every day is its own kind of lie and dishonesty anyways. So I decided to do that. So now I've got this notebook full of gratitude writing and prayers. And I had done a lot of this kind of writing with my first sponsor too. I even had these GODs, you know, every day, one gratitude, one obedience and one devotion kind of a thing. You know, the other thing that happened in the post relapse was making decisions to go take up opportunity to do work. Like speaking today is an opportunity that somebody offered me to speak. I could choose speak or don't speak. And I'm not going to lie. Part of me didn't want to come here and speak. You know, I'm like, I don't want to talk about this if I don't really have to. And then I'm like, I really should do this because oddly enough, when this person emailed me, invited me to this workshop, I was having a very singularly difficult month. And I knew that if I had this on the horizon, it would give me some extra steering to kind of get through. And that seems to be the truth about service. So, you know, one of the things was there was a 12-step workshop. I did that in 2019, and that was big. And it was once a month, 1 month for each step. And so getting out of relapse almost involved finding more time and more points on the horizon to sail towards. And then you sail into the workshop or you sail into a meeting and talk about the stuff. And it's, there are dividends, I guess. So one of the things that we're working on now, and it's really bringing meaning to the whole step 6 and 7. Again, it's funny because bulimia is really secondary to all of the inventory. You know, it never was really where the football was at. It was the resentment and the fear and then the anger and then the feeling bad about hurting people. And then that cycle just over and over and over again. And anger's it's one of my character defects that requires a great deal of work. And it makes, when you look at just sort of the physical behavior of binging and purging, I know it's serious, but compared to having to get my anger down, it's like kid stuff to stop throwing up compared to not walking around every day with and saying bad things about people, you know, in my car when I'm driving. Or, I mean, I'm just full of, so we've been working this 6 and 7 on character defects really hard for the last, I guess it's been almost 3 months now. And I'm starting to think that one of the ways to stay not relapsed, to reduce the risk of relapse is that there's all this other stuff besides just binging and purging that's worth working on, and it's like protection against relapse. So I'm just really grateful to be here, and that's kind of all I have to share. And with that, I will give up the mic.